Mornings with Bucky and Aaron are brought to you by Bud Light.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
P&E.
What's P&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Yes. Monday on the Horn, B&E with you. Work week underway. Countdown days to Christmas now. We now know the final four teams in college football. We'll recap how we got there on Championship Saturday with a goal line stop for the ages for the Baylor Bears and Dave Aranda and his defense holding Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State out four times in a row with the ball game on the line. We're sitting there watching this game, Buck, and I'm thinking, you got to let them score here. Might just need to let him score on first down so you still have time to maybe go try to win the game. And what do you know? They up and stopped him four times from the one-yard line. Incredible. Then in the second game, it was Alabama going blitzkrieg on Georgia. It's 10-0 Bulldogs. They're playing the kind of game you expected them to do. And then all of a sudden, Alabama explodes for 24 second-quarter points. Big play after big play. Bryce Young shreds the Georgia defense and its secondary. That was as explosive as we've seen Alabama look in the last 6 weeks of the season, and they go on to win that football game. That's pretty surprising stuff on Saturday. Then Michigan takes care of their business. Cincinnati takes care of their business. So here we are. Those are your final four teams with Alabama,
and
Georgia.
The Pittsburgh Panthers take care of their business in the ACC.
Yes, sir.
And Notre Dame is not playing on championship weekend. Hurts.
It did. They weren't even in the conversation.
Now that they have their coach, they need to find their conference now.
And they're going to go play Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl. That's where Notre Dame is bound, is the fifth-ranked team in the country now. So, you know, that's the way it plays out. And we have Nick Saban. You know, Nick Saban, one of his favorite little monikers is rat poison, right?
Right.
But, it's what he's done an unbelievable job in you know, talking about rat poison and to him, that's when you know the media and people, talking heads, are talking about how good his team is and how great they are, and he has to convince his team that they're not. He's got to convince his team to stay the course and don't listen to the noise. And it's a challenge for every coach, especially at a big brand like Alabama where everybody's always talking about them. We see it some here.
Well, you'd rather have that happening than nobody talking about you at all.
Well, we've seen that happen here at Texas, right? Specifically, I mean, this year was a horrible year, but you know, Tom Herman was always famous for his teams would rise up and play great against the underdog, right? But then as the favorite, they would struggle, and you know, you can't ride the wave. And here was Nick Saban after the win on actually getting some of that negative rat poison this week, which actually he said they liked quite a bit in Tuscaloosa.
You guys gave us a lot of really positive rat poison. The rat poison that you usually give us is usually fatal. But the rat poison that you put out there this week was yummy.
Was yummy.
Well,
it's
all
kind of creepy to hear him say yummy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just how you present that, coach. And you know how to do it. You don't know what it's like to be the underdog. You hardly ever are the underdog. So that's easy enough to get your team all geared up to play a team like Georgia. You've owned them. You've owned Kirby Smart and everybody else besides Jimbo Fisher, 1-25. I mean, come on.
Well, it's one of those, it you know, the game's played by human beings and young human beings at that, young adults, and we talk about it a lot. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Georgia watched the film of the Auburn game and said, man, we got these guys. These guys aren't that good. They can't block. They give up 7 sacks in the Iron Bowl. They couldn't move the football. They couldn't even get first downs.
Yeah, they only win national championships like every year.
Well, they know that. But at the same time, when you get ready for the game, you're watching the film of the last couple of games. And if you watch that, if you're Georgia, there's kind of going to be a built-in overconfidence that, yeah, they're good. And that's the rat poison he's talking about that I'm sure Kirby Smart said over and over, do not underestimate this team. Do not underestimate this team. But it certainly looked like Georgia did not come in and play their A game. That's not the best we've seen Georgia. That was the best we've seen Alabama. But it's you got to play your best in the biggest moments. And once again, Kirby's smart team did not. Now, Georgia gets a reprieve, they're going to have an opportunity to get back to that and play their best game.
And they're going to get roll tied again.
And they may. We may have a Georgia-Alabama championship, or we'll get Cincinnati-Michigan. Michigan's got something to say about that.
True.
Michigan's been as solid as a team as there's been all year. One bad quarter against Michigan State, you know, cost them a chance to be undefeated for Jim Harbaugh. And that team plays with a lot of toughness. They've got good enough. I mean, they've got skilled players now. They've got speed on that team. They've got good defense, but their defensive line and their offensive line and the strength of their team, that becomes a challenge for Georgia because Georgia's strength is their defensive line and their offensive line. That'll be a fun game in the Orange Bowl. Meanwhile, Alabama will meet Cincinnati in the Cotton Bowl. Buck up in the same stadium where they'll play the Cotton Bowl, Arlington on Saturday. It was Oklahoma State with the stop at the goal line four times. Can we hear from Mike Gundy? Here's what he had to say after the game. I mean, you can't get more disappointing. I mean, you can't get more elation than Baylor feels stopping a team four times from getting 1 yard to win the game. You can't be more discouraged.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, just, oh, my gosh, we're going to get the yard. And then the fourth down play, the kid, the running back, actually call a play that finally gets wide, and it looks like he's going to beat the kid Petrie to the goal, to the end, to the pylon, and he can't get there. He can't get to, I mean, you're thinking stick your foot in the ground and get upfield, run him over. You got to get that ball across the plane there, Buck. You're
for
a running
sure.
backs coach. Don't you got to get that ball across the line?
That's your one-on-one. I'll beat you to the corner.
Yeah, you can't take the corner put plan if you're not going to get there. And one hit kind of slowed him down just enough, and he landed short of the goal line. Here was Mike Gundy immediately following the loss on Saturday.
Well, that was a heck of a college football game. I hate to come up on the short end of that, but I told the team in the locker room how proud I was of them. They've done everything we've asked them to do since January and competed. And they showed a lot about their true character today. We had, obviously, a lot of things go against us. They continued to fight back and put themselves in a position, had a chance to win, obviously. Came up just a few inches short, but I also made them aware that that doesn't have anything to do with what they've accomplished this year. Essentially, when we start in January, we ask the players to do certain things. And they've done everything we've asked them to do for 11 months, everything we've asked them to do. So we came up a little short. But I told them I couldn't be more proud of them, the way they competed. Sometimes that happens when you put yourself in a situation like we're in. Two really good teams play today. Two teams that were pretty evenly matched. And if it would have ended up that much more the other way, it wouldn't have made them a failure either.
There we go. So, there's Mike Gundy yesterday, or on Saturday, with smart words. I mean, it was too short. And it'll be forever remembered.
No, that's going to be on him.
It is. You got to come up with a play to get a yard,
right.
But at the same time, yeah, you can't put that on the players. And it really hurt the Oklahoma State Cowboys not to have Jaylen Warren, the transfer running back, who was the
way
newcomer
he's played
the
all year.
The fall off between him and the next guy. Nothing against the young player, but just not the same. There wasn't a lot of explosion in their running game, and that put the game into Spencer Sanders' hands. And you know, we saw what we saw. I mean, all the turnovers in the first half. Set up, you know, Baylor scored all 21 of their points in the first half. They didn't score a point in the second.
Today just gave Spencer Sanders was just giving the ball away again.
Yeah, just, yeah, terrible.
Overthrows, throws it, you just can't get in there.
Meanwhile, on the other side, what a turnaround for Dave Aranda, year two for the Bears. He comes in, wins two games in
the
COVID
year. And I'm not trying to steal your coach away, Baylor, but if that Oregon job opens up and he's offered that job.
You know what, he is such a classy guy, Dave Aranda. And he said over the weekend, he said he's made a commitment to Mac Rhodes. This is where he wants to be.
That's where he'll be.
And he really likes the fit for him at Baylor. And here was Dave Aranda after the victory. They hold on 21-16. They're headed to the Sugar Bowl, New Orleans, New Year's Day, to play Ole Miss. Here's Dave Aranda.
Their ability to, with all of that, just attack it in those moments, no matter if it was hard or if it was unfair or if it was if I'm tired or I was up, you know, studying for this test, or if I, you know, was running around, I couldn't grab something to eat. Right when it came to football, I mean, they were all in, 100 miles an hour. And I think those daily interactions trained them for, you know, opportunities like today. I don't think you make those, you know, I don't think you make the most of those opportunities if you're not maximizing, you know, the daily trials, tribulations that come with just being a student athlete.
That's well said by a very quiet man. Very well said about his football team. I don't care if they were hungry. They didn't get enough to eat before practice. They still came to practice and practiced their asses off. They did all the things we asked of them academically. They're in it 100%. That's being in it right there, E.
Yeah, and that's what he's saying, right? You don't stop a team four times from the one if you haven't.
There's some doubts that can come in your mind there, but not with his football team this year.
Because that's how they battle the daily trials and tribulations, which, again, I, you know, bring a center back to Texas, and that's kind of what Steve Sarkisian's message has been for his team and this roster and what they have to achieve. They got to get to a group where it's all the time. It's every day battling, not making excuses, not making.
And you got to find out if you know, I think things like guys who want to come back the following year are those guys that you want back the following year.
Yeah.
That's got to be a part of it.
Under these circumstances, under these terms. I mean, this was your level of play this year. And level of practice and performance, and we need more. We're going to need more. We want you back, but you have to reach these expectations. No, it'll be interesting, but props to Dave Aranda. When you hear him, I remember meeting him at Big 12 Media Days this year, because remember, we didn't have the Media Days the year before, so we didn't get to meet Dave Aranda. Like, I'm interviewing him, and you got to lean in to hear him. Like, he's so soft-spoken. He's the opposite of what you think of a football coach. You normally think loud and in your, like, rah-rah. And, I mean, he's like a professor quiet sometimes. But obviously his team has earned the respect of that locker room.
And that's exactly right. They respect that dude right there. He doesn't have to be screaming and yelling at you.
Nope.
They respect what he's all about.
And that tells you it's every day for him. It's all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a consistent method. And, you know, that's...
And believe me, they practice those goal line situations.
Sure.
Where you got to make a stop from
Oklahoma State?
Do they?
Does Oklahoma State practice
them? They probably do.
Because if you watch the game.
They may have forgot about it this week.
Because if you watch the game, that goal line stand wasn't the only one. They had one earlier when it was 21-13, and they had gotten the ball down to the same spot, and they had to settle for a field goal. I mean, they had like seven or eight plays. Oh,
when I said after Texas played Baylor, I said, if they lose, it's just because Baylor has tougher players. Well, there it is right there.
Yeah, Baylor's got tough players.
They have tough players. And they have tough kids that play for them.
Credit Matt Rhule, right? A lot of those players that were fifth and sixth-year seniors were recruited by Matt Rhule.
And they stuck around when the new head coach came.
Right, and they've stuck through the transition and the COVID year, and that was a very veteran football team. I mean, Dave Aranda now got his work cut out for him because they replaced a lot of players.
Or did they ever.
A lot of good players, the leaders of his team.
Well, let me tell you, when you're headed to the Sugar Bowl, you'll pick up a couple guys along the way.
Sure.
Where there's a portal that'll understand you can make them better.
So that was big on the weekend, part of the good of the weekend, the victories. And also, you know, Texas not playing this weekend, obviously, and not playing in a bowl game. But they did pick up a recruiting win, if you're just tuning in on yesterday, with the announcement that this is Oklahoma's longest standing commitment. Big linebacker out of Lubbock Cooper High School named Kobe McKenzie, 6'2", 245, has committed to the Longhorns and decommitted from Oklahoma. That's big. He had been committed to Lincoln Riley and the Sooners since 2020. I mean, it's 2021. I mean, he was their longest-standing commitment who's broken it, and he's coming here because Lincoln Riley left. And of note for me, the Longhorns have 21 total commitments for their class of 2022 right now. Early signing window opens December the 15th, so we're a little over a week out to that. And of the 21 commitments, 13 are defensive players, okay? They've got four defensive backs committed, and then they've got nine players, what you would call front seven players, committed to this recruiting class. They've got a big defensive three-star defensive tackle out of Houston. They've got a defensive tackle out of South Haven, Mississippi, a kid named Aaron Bryant. They've also got a defensive tackle from Martin, Texas, who they really like. That is the, you know, the big four-star kid. So three defensive tackles, then three defensive ends as well. The biggest name there is probably Jamon Tapp, the kid's from Naplesville, Louisiana, four-star player.
Do they have some guys that can run and play?
Well, that's what this staff has to prove, that they're evaluating. But I'm just pointing out that
they're big kids.
They've Bo Davis on the defensive line, You know, Kyle Flood on the offensive line, these Texas coaches that have come from Alabama, when you look at these defensive commitments, what stands out is, hey, now 12 of your 21 commitments are on the defensive side.
Right.
Which they're attacking a problem. But nine of them are in the front seven. So you're talking about two pure linebackers. Now, this is a big get. This was one of Oklahoma's highest-rated players that was still on their board, and now he's coming to Texas. He's a big, you know, SEC kind of looking linebacker, 6'2", 250 type player. They've also got the commitment of a linebacker who's he's from Arlington Martin that the Longhorns are bringing in here as well. Travell Johnson, Arlington, Texas.
I love this, building them through your system, too.
And then Derek Brown, who's a kid out of Texarkana, who's more of a pass rusher than linebacker. But, man, when you've got nine dudes and 12 defense, that's where it starts. But you're right. It's got to be not about stars and this. It's about, are these players? Are these your kind of guys?
How do they fit your system, what you're trying to do?
Who are going to develop, and you are going to develop these players under your system if you're Pete Kwiatkowski.
Absolutely.
And maybe Gary Patterson is a part of this. But it is good to see. You know, it's one of those, we talked about attrition of Tom Herman's recruiting classes and Texas's effect there. But, you know, if you go back and look at Tom Herman's recruiting classes from 2018 and 19, a couple things. A, you know, when they had the third highest rated, you know, class, that's about stars and total five stars and four stars and all that stuff. Well, they had four or five star defensive backs in that class. And
they're still trying to develop one.
Right, and they were, but nothing up front, like no beef, right? Where's the beef kind of thing? But at the same time, even the defensive backs. I mean, you talk about B.J. Foster, five-star player. You know, Caden Stearns, five-star player. But Caden came in and was good as a freshman, didn't develop, and now he's starting for the Denver Broncos in the National Football League. That's where you got a meat and potatoes couple of recruiting classes, and in the transfer portal is where Texas has to attack. Lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about that. You hit that right away. By the way, happy birthday. And for E. Hogan, you're on your way to the big one. You're starting the big one.
Yeah, this is a sad morning, my friend.
No, it's not, man. It's going on your way to that.
Well, no, it's the morning of the 49th, my 49th birthday, but that means it's the start of my 50th year.
Have you ever, after all these years of us trying to get to Fort Hood, have you ever thought when you were up there and you saw that artillery, did you ever think of impaling yourself?
Sitting on an artillery shell?
And impaling yourself. I never thought that in the entire
not
time
really.
I was there, Zay, that I need to run real fast and turn around.
Well, not really,
and
but
have
thank
that
you.
Artillery hit me right there.
No, but this begins the march to my 50th birthday in 365 days. But it's actually since, you know, you're born at zero, right, and then you're one on your first mm-hmm. birthday. So I'm actually beginning my 50th
year. Yeah.
And, you know, I started this show with you when I was like 27,
just
26,
a child,
27
just a kid,
years old.
Younger than Zay.
Jesus.
Boy, and you've aged well.
Yeah, maybe. We can sit on some artillery shells.
No, you're still thriving, still doing well. Don't have any grandkids, but that's just around the corner. When you hit 50, that will be, you know, soon after that, you'll be Grandpa,
like it, right? Yeah.
You'll be telling a story about how you lived on the mean street and your grandkids will be going, ah,
shut up, Grandpa.
Really? Really?
Shut up, old man.
You on the mean streets? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly. I'll take them back to Dayton Place.
There you go.
248 Dayton Place and show them the mean streets. They'll believe me. But no, we...
take them to the tire factory.
Well, yes. There are a bunch of them. They're all closed now.
Sure.
All closed
it's
in
like
Akron,
the steel
Ohio.
Mills. I can't take them back to Bethlehem, PA.
But yeah, start of the 50th year begins today, and excited about it. We'll see. Happy birthday. Thank you very much.
So could you see Dave Aranda? I mean, you can't see him bolting out of there for a job like Oregon open up. I mean, that's, speaking of once in a lifetime, maybe Baylor is his once in a lifetime, though.
It's the way he talks, and I think with the integrity that Dave Aranda brings, you believe it.
Yeah, but you wouldn't think any less of him if he said, I'm going to go to Oregon, would you? I mean, Oregon is a...
No, but I don't think he will.
That's right. That's why I don't see Mario Cristobal, with the exception of his mother being ill and him, you know, living, and she's there in Miami, of him. Why would you leave Oregon to go to University of Miami? That's kind of like...
Well, the only challenge,
I mean, is
to
he
Oregon,
a graduate of University of Miami? Is that where
Cristobal, that's where he started. I don't know if he's got a degree. That's where he
started
began
coaching?
His coaching.
Okay.
With Butch Davis way back and climbed the ladder. But no, Cristobal will be a great fit. I don't know what the fit is at Oregon, because Chip Kelly was able to make them a national contender. But Oregon, kind of like Washington, there's just not a strong national or local recruiting base, right? There's not a bunch of five-star kids living in Oregon.
They come to the state of Texas and places like that and grab them.
But you have to recruit the state of California really well, and then parts west, and then you know, because of Nike, you can try to make it a national program. There's no doubt about that. But you know, that impacts possibly Texas. You know, Mario Cristobal leaving. There's a hotshot recruit, offensive line recruit from the city of Houston named Kelvin Banks, who is committed to Oregon. You wonder if Cristobal leaving, and remember, Cristobal's an offensive line guy. That's what he cut his teeth doing, coming through Miami and the SEC. He's an offensive line coach by trade, which is why he was doing well in that recruitment. You wonder if a guy like Kelvin Banks is, you know, having second thoughts about who he's going to sign with in December or later in the month. And because this is what we're talking about. Because someone mentioned, I was talking about the nine defensive front, not seven guys in this recruiting class for Texas. There's only two offensive linemen on this class, so only two on the O-line. Now, and that's where Steve Sarkisian addressed that. You know, at the end of the regular season, he said, look, we could have five or six committed right now, but we want the right five. We are not going to give in. We want to be in the Cam Dubarry discussion and the Kelvin Banks discussion. They're not going to just sign anybody at this point because they know how important that position is. So we'll see. I do think by the time we get to the 15th, that two will be four or five on the offensive line, and then you hit into the portal as well. But, yeah, that is absolutely the point of emphasis right now for Texas on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, and I as much as I like the portal, I think it's a great opportunity for kids. I just like them kind of homegrown from high school.
It's the best way to go.
I just think it is for the culture of your school. But I don't want somebody else's – I don't want to call them problems, but I don't – Well, I think a lot of times, you know,
I think Steve Sarkisian puts it in a good term. You can't major in it, but you have to be a part of it.
Well, I don't know what it did for him this year.
Well, I mean, they just got here.
But I know, and those weren't really the guys that he really, Tom Herman kind of brought those dudes.
Yeah, but the portal, think about what we just watched this weekend. You know, where would Oklahoma State be without Jalen Warren, their leading rusher?
Well, where would Mel Tucker's $95 million be?
Right, Mel Tucker and his transfer portal acquisitions at Michigan State. You know, every team we watch, the kid number one for Alabama came in from Ohio State as a portal player. The wide receiver got them going in that situation. I mean, this is you have to be in the portal because there's good players there and they're veteran players. Now, I don't think you can major in it.
No,
but you still want to develop, and that's what Sark has said. I mean, of these 35 new players that are maybe going to be on part of this roster, 25, 26 of them are going to be high school players, but that's still 8 or 9 or 10 out of the portal. I don't have a problem with that because this team has holes that you have to try to plug right now with guys who can come in and help immediately.
Zay, would you still be mad at me if I was just unrolling my sleeping bag from the Klubnik's driveway after shooting some hoops in the driveway?
No, I wouldn't be mad at all. Would I think you're very disrespectful? Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, you got to get out of Klubnik's driveway.
Why? Why do I have to get out of the driveway?
I'll tell you why when we come back. I'll
put the little two-man tent in the driveway.
Because he's told you no multiple times. Leave the kid alone, for crying out loud. We're coming back. Beanie on the horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
B&E with you. It is the Monday after Championship Saturday in college football. The Final Four is set. High school football Final Four is set in 4A, or 6A, 5A, 4A, all the way up and down, which is fun. And then, of course, the NFL yesterday. Detroit Lions pick up their first win. They beat your Minnesota Vikings, my friend. That was embarrassing. That was some embarrassing coaching late in that game on both sides. Like, my man Dan Campbell, biting off kneecaps, was trying to get himself fired by going for it up 23-21. Went for it on fourth and one.
But he knew who he was playing.
Mike Zimmer, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, up two in his own end of the field, like at the 35-yard line. Goes for a fourth and one to try to, you know, get a first down. They run play action. Jared Goff actually gets sacked. So down two, Minnesota actually takes over the ball at their own 20-yard line. And all they have to do is go 20 yards to get a touchdown. But they get the ball down to the goal line, and Mike Zimmer, the head coach of the Vikings, has a decision to make. Am I going to... Because the two-minute warning just passed, and the first play of coming out of the two-minute warning, they stopped the Vikings at the one-yard line. And at that point, they're out of timeouts. So from that point, Mike Zimmer could have drained 40 seconds, and then on third down, drained 40 more, which would have gotten the clock down to about 30 seconds left in the game, by my math. because there was about 1:50 to go in the game. So you drain the clock down to roughly a half a minute, and then you kick the field goal. Instead, on the next play, they scored a touchdown, which, you know, they went up 4 points. They went for two, didn't get it, so they're up 27-23. But that left the Lions with a minute and a half plus, minute and 40 seconds, to try to go down and score, which they did. It took them all the way to the final play, and they get a walk-off touchdown pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Buck, question, should they have drained the clock, leave as little time as possible, and go ahead and make a you know, 20-yard field goal to win the ball game? But, you know, let me say, the Lions still would have had like 30 seconds to try to go back and get a field goal.
No, I'll give you 30 seconds to see if you can score.
Yeah,
anybody that's not Tom Brady.
It's not like totally, yeah, well, it is Jared Goff, but it's not slam dunk, because a minute 40 seconds needed a touchdown versus 30 seconds needed a field goal, but no timeouts either way. I don't know. I think I would have drained it. Mm-hmm. Clock is my ally on this thing. I'm going to get as far down as I can.
Kick.
And, you know, your defense can't give up that touchdown drive to the worst offense in pro football, not named the Houston Texans. That can't happen. So the day after, the morning after that.
Yeah, which should have been the pick of the weekend, too. The Colts versus them.
You want to talk about a mismatch?
Oh.
That was Tyrod. And the Texans.
Every time Taylor touched the ball, I was looking for this big play.
Well, it just was workmanlike. They just methodically destroyed the Texans. And Sam Ellinger got to play in the game.
I saw that.
Because there was such a blowout. But, Houston, I don't know how you achieve this. The Houston Texans have the 32nd ranked offense in the 32-team NFL. But how about this? This is the distinction. They're 32nd in passing. They're 32nd in rushing. You know how hard that is? You know how hard it is to be that bad in every category? I mean, that's garbage. That's garbage.
Come on, man.
But you know who's good in a good, bad, and ugly Monday? I know coming up, Jeff and Snoop and Craig will be talking about the big high school Saturday that you were a part of with Lake Travis. But Westlake beating Vandergrift 70-7.
Did you see those offensive linemen, what they did to the kids from Vandergrift?
I did.
And Coach is building something really nice at Vandergrift. But this is a program in Westlake that's got a lot of tradition, a lot of age to it, and a lot of beef to it.
Well, listen,
they're
Cade,
big kids.
And Cade Klubnik's the quarterback. He's going to Clemson. They got Jaden Greathouse, the receiver. But, you know, the kid that scored 6 touchdowns on Saturday behind that big offensive line is a 5'5 sophomore.
Yes.
Named Jack Kaiser.
I saw that live and in person, too, for 63.
He's like a little Deuce Vaughn. He's like a little Deuce Vaughn. But he's a sophomore who, I heard Todd Dodge say it last week, they saw the kid playing on junior varsity and running all over people. He said, I don't know much about football, but I know that kid can help us win games.
That's right.
He's now their starting running back as a sophomore, and he's this tiny little thing.
Well, it's hard to find him behind those guys.
I know.
Size of those dudes.
It's true. He does hide behind that line, and they don't find him, and then boom, he's gone. He out the gate.
Just like you'd find me if I was Sark right in that front yard. I can't. By the way, I wouldn't even go in the driveway. I'd do it like I'd be on the grass.
You're adamant that they don't give up on losing Cade Klubnik to Clemson. Can I give you a little piece of information on Cade?
Yes. It's done.
He's got a girlfriend.
Yes. And she what?
And they've been going out since like middle school.
Okay.
And where's she going to college? Clemson.
Oh, Clemson.
Where is he going to college?
Clemson. They'll be both touching a rock going down the...
Yes. So if you're going to be camping out in somebody's yard, you might want to camp out in her yard.
Maybe that's the spot I need to go.
Then you'll get arrested.
What are you going? Yeah. What are you going to Clemson for anyway? Come on now. Come on.
Yeah, but that's the word.
Image and likeness? You want some image and likeness?
Now, if you can convince her to not go to Clemson and stay home, then maybe, Zay, maybe you got to take a different angle on that.
Zay says, I'm totally wrong. This is bad. I said, I like a lot of coffee because I'm a closer.
Yeah, the only thing worse you said than this is when you thought Deion Sanders should go to the U.
They're going to hire Mario Cristobal. And somebody pointed out that Mario indeed did go to Miami and was an offensive lineman for the Miami Hurricanes.
Okay, well, that's different. That's your school.
Hurricanes, and that's where he's headed. But yeah, props to Jack Kaiser, 6 touchdowns. And can I just put this in, because there's good high school football in this area, right? You see it all the time. Mm-hmm. And the best two teams not named Westlake are Vandergrift and Lake Travis, correct?
Yes.
Westlake scored 177 points against those two teams this year.
Roll.
Excuse me, 133 points. They scored 70 and they beat Lake Travis, what, 63 to whatever it was? That is, and now this weekend, if you're looking for a great high school football game, this Saturday, McLean Stadium in Waco, it's Westlake and Katy. And that's a battle. That is big time. And I don't know how you stop a team that scores 70 points on a pretty dang good Vandergrift team and 63 on a team you see all the time, Buck. Really
yes.
good. But am I wrong to say that the as good and as big as Lake Travis is, they just can't match up with the lines of scrimmage of these
no.
guys?
No, the physicality of this team. And when you have a quarterback
that's that good,
who's been through some state championships and seen it and played in those things even as a backup, no, dude, this guy is – they've got leadership from everywhere, from the head coach on.
Zay, you're a Bowie Bulldog, so you can't say anything good about Westlake, but you got to be a little bit impressed with the Shaps, man.
Yeah, it's getting ridiculous. Coach Dodge is bringing kids out of band who are playing the clarinet, and they're out here scoring 6 touchdowns.
Wow.
Yeah, come on now. Good grief.
Band camp?
Come on, man. Like the drum majors now scoring?
Wow.
6-pack?
Yeah, it don't matter.
Anybody could
score.
That's awesome.
Who wants a touchdown? Oprah Winfrey, you get a touchdown, you get a touchdown.
Well, like I don't – Craig Way will be better on this coming up, but, I mean, as far as historic runs, I mean
– nothing like it.
I mean, if they win the state, if they beat Katy and win 2 more games, they're going to have 3 straight, and it'll be a 40-game winning streak. 40 games in a row that they've won. I mean, that is remarkable. But props to Westlake. Great season for Vandergrift as well, and good luck. Lake Travis now plays North Shore, Buck. Galena Park North Shore this weekend.
And I've seen that act, too, a few times.
And that game's up at the Palace on Parmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right here in our backyard. So good stuff. Craig and Snoop and the guys will have all of that coming up in the next program. We're also talking Quinn Ewers into the transfer portal, Texas, and their pursuit of Gary Patterson. Of course, the Final Four in college football is set. And more on that NFL coming. It's B&E with you. We are live. We are local. We are digital. We're always there with you on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. All right, big stuff going on a Monday. It is recapping the weekend, but now looking forward for Texas and for this Quinn Ewers conversation. Well, could there be some Gary Patterson development this week now that the college football season is officially in the books and bowl season begins in a couple weeks? Heisman Trophy, Bryce Young, right? Is that where your vote's going, Buck?
Yeah, I would say after this weekend, yes.
431 yards passing against that Georgia defense. In the biggest spot. I've had several people suggesting that Georgia took the dive in order to get 2 SEC teams in. We know Kirby Smart's a competitive person. He wants to beat Nick Saban. He's not going to, these are competitors. These players are competitors.
They're not helping their buddy, and they just didn't play their best game.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe, but this is why I think Nick Saban talked about the rat poison being yummy. I do think young people are impressionable. And I do think we see this quite a lot with all schools that, you know, how can one team look so great one week and then so bad the next? Or, you know, your preparation has to be on point. And I do think Georgia went in with a little bit of an inflated opinion of itself. And watching Alabama in its previous couple of games in the Iron Bowl and against LSU.
And throughout that entire time, Alabama still only lost 1 game. Winners know how to win.
They do. But, you know, as you're watching the film, you're thinking, golly, they can't block. This is going to be kind of easy when
that's a silly mindset to watch that film and go that direction. That's where coaching comes in.
Sure.
Don't fall for that.
Well, and this is what Nick Saban talks about other coaches with the rat poison. You can say it all you want. You know, the players have to bring the attitude. The players bring the edge, and the players have to put in the week
and
of
that's
practice.
Why that's why they're winners. They keep winning.
They do. But they certainly looked vulnerable going into that game, and they certainly did not on Saturday. And that's credit to...
And Bill Nick O'Brien Saban. Just kept at it because what his guys did, what his quarterback did, was get himself a Heisman and just light up a team that was incredibly great on defense.
Well, and I don't want to say they picked on one guy, but it felt like the safety number 16, they saw something on film and they attacked him. They got him for 3 or 4 big plays where he took bad angles and they got the coverage they wanted.
Yeah, and Kirby's a pretty good defensive coordinator, so if he let that happen to his team, that's silly. I mean, that guy, Williams can absolutely dead up fly.
Yeah, and they
got to know better than that.
And they, you know, drew up some great routes. But the biggest surprise was how they protected Bryce Young, because those big plays take time to develop. And the game before against Auburn, they had, you know, 7 sacks, and they couldn't block anybody. Bryce Young had no time the week before. Even if guys were open, it didn't matter. And Georgia, we assumed, had a better front than even the Auburn Tigers, and wasn't the case. I mean, wasn't even close to the case.
Yeah, somebody asked me, did people stop recruiting Ricky Williams when he said he was coming to Texas? No, they did not, all the way up until the last week of recruiting.
Sure.
Until the last weekend.
But I
where he made a decision to say that he was going to go to San Diego State to help them out, and I said, go ahead. You've already told me you're coming, but you go do what you have to do. And he did a hell of a job by going there and helping out their recruiting.
Hey, by the way, breaking news. Breaking news.
Uh-oh.
As expected, and I think he knew it was coming, Manny Diaz has been officially fired this morning.
He knew that was coming this
morning?
Dismissed
from his position. Yes. Well, they had to hire a new AD, which they have done. They've hired the Clemson athletic director, and now here comes the Mario Cristobal deal that's been put together and pretty much done by, you know, the president and the other officials there at Miami, which is what, you know, when they moved, there's a lot of these people that are pushing for the hire of Mario Cristobal that wanted Mario Cristobal before they hired Manny Diaz.
Right.
But the AD that got fired decided he wanted Manny Diaz more than Mario Cristobal. So, you know, that leads to a fraction in your program, or fracture, I should say. And so now the AD's out, new AD's in, and they're hiring the guy that everybody wanted all along. So Mario Cristobal. And I think if you're thinking Cristobal, you're thinking, you know what? It's the ACC. It's not the SEC West. I can go in there and kind of like Lincoln Riley is thinking at USC, there's only four spots in the playoff, but if we can, you know, the biggest rival is Clemson. We've got to build a program, keep players from South Beach and South Beach, and we can be right there and we don't have to
be. Yeah, Lincoln Riley can think now that if Cristobal is in Miami, that's great for me,
sure.
Too.
No, I mean, it just opens up for sure out there, and I don't know where Oregon turns at this point. Be interesting to see what they're going to do. But Cristobal, now, and you know, if you're Phil Knight and people who run that Oregon program, you've got to be disappointed. Because this is a team that just 3 weeks ago was in the top three of the rankings. And back-to-back really humbling losses to Utah, who now wins the Pac-12 and is headed to the Rose Bowl to play Ohio State.
Wow, first time. How about that for them?
Well, don't you have to be asking, did Mario Cristobal take his eye off the ball on this? Did he lose this team? Because this team was trending.
You know, if they weren't beat up so physically, but Utah beat them physically again, twice in a row.
Yeah, twice in a row.
It wasn't a mystery
how
they beat them.
Twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they physically beat them up.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was hard to believe.
Yeah, and there were times, even though they beat Ohio State and Columbus, that they looked vulnerable and susceptible. All right, Buck, great stuff. Great stuff. Good. Appreciate all the birthday wishes today on the text line. That's very nice. Go enjoy that. I'm going to be watching Monday Night Football tonight from a very cold, wet, and windy Buffalo, New York. Where else would you rather be on the 6th
That's
of December?
Right.
I can tell you, when I was growing up on the mean streets of Ohio, Buck, Akron, Ohio, that lake effect snow and those kind of days, I had many a birthday party washed out, snowed out.
Did you have a turtleneck? You had a little dicky?
No.
You had a real turtleneck?
I don't know what my mom put me in back then. You know, she dressed me. I was just a kid. Buck, have a good Monday. Good luck. Poker tonight?
Could be poker.
Zay, enjoy your soup and two sandwiches.
Appreciate it.
Everybody have a great Monday. We'll do this again on a Tuesday. We'll know week 13. We'll wrap up in the NFL. See if anything develops in the Longhorn situation today. We'll be watching it, and we'll be covering it for you live, local, and digital right here on the Horn. Light the Tower, Shirts and Skins, RBKD this afternoon. Have a great Monday, everybody. If you missed any part of the program, any of our conversations from the weekend, it's all podcast for you. Make it easy at hornfm.com.